All right, well, I was just telling you that Elizabeth came over for dinner, and so she happens to be exactly right here, and we're gonna just have a conversation in person, which will be easier to manage people raising their hands and asking questions because I won't have to go back and forth between muting you and muting Elizabeth. We can just be in the same space. Anyway, so this is my friend Elizabeth. She's just amazing in every way, and she has they, sorry, they have very strong they've done a lot of reading and a lot of research about gender and how society does dumb stuff to us related to gender. And there we go. When I move my computer, I lose internet. Oh, whoopsie. Sorry, Chuck. I missed that. But anyway, so take it away. She's been taking no they've been taking notes.
Well, I mean, if anyone has questions
Yes, raise
or
your hand
concerns,
anytime.
let's start with that.
And you guys know how to raise your hand, right? So if you go to the bottom of your screen, along the bottom, there should be a line that says more with three dots. When you click on more, one of the options is raise hand. So that's how you raise your hand and say you want to ask, either ask Elizabeth a question or make a comment or
Right,
whatever.
commentaries, themes, things that stood out to you, takeaways from the movie or this half of the movie. I mean, I'm all ears. Good
All right, Nicole, you're on.
evening.
Oh, hang on. There we go.
Okay, I'm on you. Hi. So yeah, I've often thought about how a lot of times when I'm confused about something with society, I think, well, what were we back in the tribal days, and I thought, when you think of the simple tribes, they would have something, a tradition where they would take the boys out, and go through these different things, to become a man, and there would be something structured, and I guess same for the women too. And I just feel like in our culture we have nothing, there's nothing, and so the boys have that innate need, and so they go do the violent video games, or they'll get in trouble or whatever, and there's nothing. There's no good challenges in this wonderful American society we have. Back when we had wars, the men would go to war, and that got fulfilled. Okay, I'm done talking. Sorry.
So I think that's an excellent point. Ritual is something that is an amazing topic. Actually, with ritual, you can achieve healing of grief. And I don't know if people remember in the movie they're talking about, men needing to grieve. And so we are a culture devoid of ritual, and in many ways, that can come from anything. It can come from religion, or it can come from families. Families sometimes have their own rituals, but we're devoid of this. And the subject of like trauma, which we know is kind of everywhere, including collective trauma, ritual is a powerful part of being able to provide some level of healing. And we don't have that. So I think we've done a poor job of doing the healing, both collectively and individually. And so I think it's just an excellent point. It also offers people an avenue to feel greater belonging. And I think that the crisis of people feeling inauthentic, right, or the inability to be authentic makes it so that they can't experience belonging, which is the core of a lot of the violence and acting out we see in our society, probably especially for males.
Yeah. Does that answer your question, Nicole, or you have a follow-up?
No, that's great. I mean, to put that in that box of ritual, that helps me to think actually of, I've had that thought, like, what do we have left? We have Christmas, Thanksgiving is wonderful, but those are your real family, but what about when we grow up? Even like the Christian religion, I get frustrated. I am a Christian, and I think, what have we done? We give these nice little stories about Jesus when kids are little, and then that's it. There's no reflection of the depth of Christ and all that. Anyway, in the general populace, and I could go on and on, but that really helps to think about good ritual. That's really helpful.
Well, and actually, it's exciting because that is an avenue. Like, we can create rituals, and you can come up with however elaborate a ritual you want to infuse your family with or infuse your society with. For example, during COVID and post-COVID, a lot of people started having like group dinners, like whole towns will picnic, and sometimes that's a big healing ritual, the collective thing that allows people to get together and speak across difference and et cetera. So yeah, I think just a wonderful point. And yeah, it's about really, it's about feeling belonging, and then it has a powerful potential to help people heal.
Yeah, my kids actually, this just came up, I think today, when my kids were little, and really, I mean, till they left for college, we had this tradition in our family that starting on December 1st and going through Christmas or until they went back to school, every day I would make this chain of little pieces of construction paper all linked together, one for each day of the month. And when they'd wake up in the morning, they'd open it and it would have something, related to the holiday that we were going to do that day. And if it was a busy day, it'd be something real simple, like, we're going to have pancakes for dinner. And if it was a day where we were going to go do something fun, like, go on a sleigh ride with our cousins or, go see the Santa parade in St. Charles or whatever. And when my kids were mid-teenagers, I remember one day I was kind of bitching to my ex-husband about, oh God, it's time to make the links. And he said, well, the kids are getting older now. Like, how long are you going to do this? And Maya was listening and she said, how long are we going to do this? We should do this forever. I'm going to do this with my kids. And I thought, I had started it just because, I don't know, somebody gave me the idea and I thought it was a brilliant way to celebrate the holiday with action and interaction, do family stuff, as opposed to, I remember my co-leader at Girl Scouts, she would work four jobs in all of November and December so that she'd have enough money to buy everybody all the right presents. And I hate throwing stuff away. I hate over consumption, and that always felt wrong to me. So I wanted to find a way to make the holiday meaningful for my family in a way that didn't cost me a lot of money and didn't make a bunch of crap that I was going to just throw away next year when they were tired of it. Anyway, that was a tradition that my family developed that obviously went pretty well. All right, Nicole, your hand is still up, and I can't tell if it's because you are still, whoops,
I didn't realize it was a lower.
that's okay. All right, I know how to lower it.
But if nobody else has something, I have something.
Yeah, follow
Oh,
up.
you lowered it. Okay.
It's okay. You can finish your sentence.
Okay.
We got
And then we do have Jim who wants to
yeah,
say something.
Jim's
Okay.
after you.
Okay. So my friend who is 7th year for sexual offense, he's going to be getting out soon. I really, really think this is the time. So I had to sit down with his adopted mom because we've been sort of working separate, and she seems kind of so it was great. And she told me though that the adopted dad, her husband, got really disappointed with Freedom. Freedom's my friend's name, and that they had a falling out when he was like 15 or 16, and he was adopted at age 7. Around 16, he started becoming 16-year-old and being difficult, and he basically disowned him. And he lived with his maternal uncle, and just got wild, and in all that, it happened, And so I just sometimes I think, can't this guy see that he's part of the problem? Speaking of fathers, so any ideas now or any time, to how maybe, I don't know, I always feel like if I talk to somebody, they'll understand. So anyway, just a something
Yeah,
to throw out here.
getting people to understand later
Ugh.
the impacts of their behavior when you were young, that can be pretty difficult.
Yeah.
Elizabeth and I
Anyway.
were just talking today about a letter I wrote to my dad about maybe 3 years ago or
Well, maybe
so.
that's something he could do, is write a
And
letter to his
it was
dad.
a pretty honest letter. And I basically just said, like, I don't know why we're fighting so much. And I, explained, the things that were part of my personality that I got from him that I was proud of, that I felt were, really powerful lessons I got from my dad, And then I, veered off into the the parts of our relationship that had gone, you know, the wrong direction, that we'd separated. And it was really, it was a hard letter to write. I took, you know, I probably took about 6 months to write it. And then I, you know, ran it past all the people I consider like my mirrors who helped me, you know, decide is this sound right. And, you know, I guess it could have gone south, but, you know, I put enough love in it. You know, I made a criticism sandwich where I, you know, at the beginning I said a bunch of lovely things, and then in the middle I put the kind of rough things, and then I ended with like, you're not gonna live forever, and I don't want to have your life end when we feel this separated. And things have just totally turned around for me and my
Wow.
dad. He hasn't called me a communist for like 3 years, and
Wow.
he doesn't say Haiti things. And this year on Father's Day, he said, "I'm so glad you call me on Father's Day." And I said, "I'm so glad you don't call me a communist." And then we like had a big hug, and it was great. So, you know, I can't promise that that would happen for everyone, but it's worth a try. And writing the letter makes you really think through every detail of it. And it just gives you more chances to not screw it up. All right, Jim, you've been very patient. I'm sorry we took so long. Oops. There we go. We keep both. I'm not touching it again. You touch it. There we go.
Okay, I think it's working now. You can hear me good. Yeah, the movie showed a lot of the negative aspects of relationships, which could cause maybe one of the situations that may be causing children to watch porn or not having healthy relationships. Then it showed children having a healthy relationship with the father that may help them to be productive and less addicted to porn and other things. But for those who are already deep in the rabbit hole, really deep in it, I don't know if it really showed aspects of how they could get out of that deep hole into porn and other addictions. And I'm a Christian too, so some of the churches, they have like freedom groups, or celebrate recovery groups. But one of the things they should also point out is they should have a very good filter on the computers, the phones for boys and men, no matter if you think they're on porn or not, because it's so easy to get it, even for those who think they will never watch porn. There's filters need to be on there at all times so that they can't easily get into porn. They're in the spam, they're in the chat where they have a link, and it's too easy. So there has to be at least filters, and they have to have a lot of those who are already deep in it and they want to get out and should get out to have the help they need. And of course, God can help them get freedom as well. So that's one of the points that, need to be seen and talked about as well. Especially filters is really good.
Well, they did mention, I remember, only 50% of parents are like, oh, took the time to pay attention to what kind of games their kids were playing. So yeah, better parenting would probably be a good place to start. I remember my therapist said he saw lots and lots of men who came to him specifically because they were using so much porn that their brains were wired. When they would try to have sex with an actual person, it didn't turn them on because their brains had been so rewired by this just deluge of all the porn that they were watching that they recognized that it was affecting their actual human relationships. Now these were, you know, mostly grown men. No one's gonna follow you around putting a filter on your computer the rest of your life. But yeah, I agree. Paying more attention to your kids is so smart.
So yeah, it's hard because we can't lock down the internet. And at this point, we've had exponentially more and more access. And like to be honest, like our world demands certain kinds of porn. It's kind of a positive feedback mechanism, and it's lucrative. The industry is worth so much money. So it benefits certain interests for our children to be addicted to porn. to consume porn, right? It kind of reinforces a society that, yes, we need to take a step back and reevaluate what kind of society would we like to have. And then I want to address the point that you kind of started with was, you know, like the path out, right? What is the path out of, you know, this socialization that we're forcing upon and using to abuse our young men? I think the path out is partly, like you said, you know, like group support. If you see modeled in the movie, there's a lot around affinity groups for males, right? They have a group in prison. They have a handful of different groups, but where they actually can feel safety, express their emotions, be vulnerable with and supportive of each other, and then also combat shame, right? Because Brené Brown does a lot of research on shame, a lot of research on vulnerability. And she basically makes the point that men fear being perceived as weak. Mm-hmm. Like that is the absolute worst thing that could, you know, if you're perceived as weak, then you're toast, right? And mm-hmm. weakness and emotionality end up connected. That's in the book Daring Greatly. She talks about this a lot. So then, you know, men don't have space to express their emotions. They bottle them all up. And in some cases, they externalize them or they internalize them to the point of violence towards self or others, right? So how do we create groups for men to support other men and teach the skills associated with recognizing what your emotions are and then being expressive of those emotions? And I mean, it's a big ask, right? These are big skills. And yes, ideally, if your parents and if your schools teach you some of this stuff in a healthy way, you will be a better adapted adult. The problem is so many children don't have that privilege. Their parents don't know how to express emotions and don't create space for that or, you know, respond supportively when they do express emotions. So really, I think there's a lot around like shame, vulnerability, emotionality, and like mutual support.
Yeah, you're right, because most parents in our lives are dysfunctional in the first place. So it's when we grow older and these porn and that has been very destructive in our lives that we call for help. We don't ask for help until a big problem comes into our lives and then we hit bottom. Then we said, help anybody. I want to find somebody. Somebody will help me now. You know, and there are some websites that do help, but it's usually the men won't ask for help until their lives are destroyed, like ours have been, you know. Then I really, really wanted help, but I'm much better, of course, at it than in the past. So, yeah, you do a good job. There should be more of this movies you make like that. So I appreciate that.
Yeah,
thank you.
I would also like to comment on that, the asking for help thing. I mean, again, yeah, it's like there's another quote from that book in Daring Greatly. Men know what women really want. They want us to pretend to be vulnerable, and we get really good at pretending. So it's like often they feel even inauthentic in, you know, in like broaching surface issues in their relationships. So it's so big to ask for help. It's like a powerful, you know, challenge, I guess. And so it's like, she kind of touches on that in the book and how it's like, it's terrifying to ask for help. So then, like you said, often people don't do it unless they're absolutely desperate.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, life destroyed, then you're crying for help. Okay, thank you.
Is it in Daring Greatly? Did I do it wrong?
No. The quote is in it. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
got
this
it.
Quote. Got the quote around men needing to pretend even vulnerability, right?
Yeah.
They can't even have real vulnerability.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, even just understanding your own emotions. I remember when I was in couples therapy with my ex-husband, I went to his therapy. I was reading a book. It was called Hold Me Tight, 7 Conversations for a Lifetime of Love. And, you know, in the book, they would kind of talk through people having these conversations with their partners. And I took this book to his therapist and I said, if you can get him to talk to me the way the people in this book are talking to each other, you know, I think I could keep this alive. And she said, oh, yeah, we're not there yet. This is like Nietzsche and we're reading Go, Spot, Go. She was basically still working with him on like, when you don't exercise and you've already eaten dinner, how does your, you know, how do your fingers feel and how does your tummy feel? And because he just hadn't learned how to even understand his own body, much less to describe to me what he was, why he was doing something or how he was feeling. He just wasn't even on the list. So yeah, more making more groups like those groups we saw in the school with the guy or in the prison, groups like that, that boys can have their whole lives growing up. You know, I wish we could rewind, you know, and kind of go back to the beginning. But
We'll take if anyone else has questions, but also I wanted to emphasize that, you know, most mental health education is organized in schools, right? So that's where most children receive any mental health care or support. And so really maybe the place for a lot of this is in schools. You know, teaching emotional intelligence is something that just pays it forward for society, right? For undoing intergenerational trauma, right? As well as just for having good relationships for the rest of your life and being able to project good into the world. And we need everyone to do that. I'm not even saying these classes have to be gendered. There are female people and, you know, other socialized people who really need this as well. And when you grow up in an abusive home, it's less likely that you're going to have that access to, you know, healthy expressions of emotions. And so, you know, more likely that you're going to get a lot of these negative outcomes.
Yeah, honestly, the one thing that I pick up from Elizabeth more than anything else is just the idea that so often in our society, we want to put things in a box of female or male. And Elizabeth has always just said, why is this even necessary? Why does it have to be, oh, women do things this way and men do things this way, or girls are this way and boys are this way? Why can't we just all be people who just do all the things we want to do?
Well, and I actually also want to emphasize, you know, that there's a theme in this movie around dehumanization and really the dehumanization of males. And what we need is humanizing elements, right? So in general, what is positive masculinity? What is positive femininity? It's just humanizing. It's everything needs to be, we need to provide people with empathy and space to grow and space to be vulnerable and experience belonging and et cetera. So yeah, humanization is the antidote to dehumanization. And we move in this direction of othering and dehumanization far too often. It probably is the core issue of our society. So
yeah. All right, Mike.
Yeah, hand.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
So I thought the movie was really good. I think this was done in what, 2015? Is that right?
It was 13. Yeah.
13. So I was kind of thinking about the numbers of, or the, excuse me, like the data that was collected, and here we are, you know, approaching 2025, and I'm just, you know, knock on wood, I'm assuming the numbers have probably gone up since then, right? The problem's gotten worse. And you know, I really commend these kids for expressing how they feel, you know, because when I think about what it was like for me in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, it was a kind of a different time. And, you know, I didn't really grow up with masculine males in my household, right? It was kind of like a single mom and, you know, grandmother that was helping out. And, you know, the males that I did look up to, like my older brother and, you know, my grandfather and stuff like that, they weren't really in my life a lot. So, you know, I'm watching this film and I'm trying to relate to, you know, some kid whose father physically abused him by saying that he's not man enough or whatever. And thankfully, I never had that. However, you know, I was trying to fit in, you know, I was, you know, I was made fun of, I didn't have, you know, there were all these cliques and stuff like that. So I kind of related to some other of these kids in the film, if you will. And I noticed that, you know, especially with me, I felt like when you're a kid, it's almost like the ego is starting to take over, you know, you need to fit in, you need to have the ego. The world is about you. It's survival of the fittest. It's, you know, you need to do this because if you don't, you know, get into this fight at the mall, you know, these people won't respect you, you know? And so, I think that like in my opinion, the fix is obviously with these kids addressing it and helping them have the resources that they need. But then there's also the generational trauma. You know, I resented my father for many years, and I resented my grandfather, and I resented, you know, these even mentors that I had in college teachers and stuff, that, like, you know, you lock on to someone because you want them to fix your daddy issues, but then they need to move on and help other people. And so when you're neglected as a child and you neglect that fatherly or that masculine relationship or bond, you kind of feel like a failure when it leaves you, you know, and you kind of have to build it yourself. And it feels good watching other people that are helping, you know, helping these kids sort of find their way, because a lot of these kids don't have a voice. But I think a big portion of it is addressing the generational trauma. I think as much as the parents want to sit back and say, I don't know, my kid's just watching too much porn, or I don't know, my kid's playing video games and he's a nut. You know, I think at the end of the day, the parents need to take accountability. And, you know, I think the reason why they're like that is because of the generational trauma. You know, my dad wasn't a good dad because his dad wasn't a good dad. He didn't have the skills to be a good dad. And it took me a long time to find peace with that, you know, to be like, all right, you know, I'm going to get beyond this, you know, because he didn't have the skills that he needed, you know, and I can't hold him against that. You know, I need to be smarter. And, you know, if I'm ever to have kids, you know, I'm going to be a good dad, you know, and then you get tied up into this registry stuff and the thoughts of having a family aren't possible, you know, and the mistakes that you made as a kid affect you as an adult, you know, and you don't want to see people have to live your life over again. So you advocate and you fight and you're trying to be a voice, but then you still have the hierarchy of people that want to silence you. You know, there's still this hierarchy, you know, there's still political agendas or religious beliefs or stuff like that that don't want us to solve this problem, you know, whether it be music and, you know, you look at all that P. Diddy stuff that's coming out right now. And again, it's like, it's knowing secrets about people and then using that energy to silence them. You know, when you're a kid and your friend knows a personal secret about you, you know, and then they hold it over your head and then you don't want to be friends with them going into high school anymore, but they leverage that, you know, it's that ego that controls, I think a lot of this trauma that we carry. And, but I really commend these kids, because when I was a kid, you wouldn't go into a group and like open up about, you know, your feelings and stuff like that. You know, that's like adult stuff. And, you know, when I was a kid and I would make mistakes, you know, the judge or the lawyers, they would be like, you need to deal with the repercussions of your actions. You know, you got to be an adult about this, you know? And it's like, one minute we want these kids to mature up so quick, but then the next minute we want these kids to be kids, you know, just let them be kids. It'll all play itself out. Just let them be kids. But at the same time, they're like bullying each other and stuff. So it's, I don't know. I really feel for people, that even the friends that I have that have kids right now, because I think it's just really challenging time to be in, really is, you know, and I wish everyone the best with it. It's just, it's, you know, I don't know where to really begin with it. I think there's a lot of trauma in this country that's just never been addressed, you know, it's boiling over. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it was a great film. I think it probably needs a phase two at some point, or you know,
an update.
Yeah,
right. Update. Definitely an update. So on the statistics, to address the first thing that you said, you're like, I assume this has gotten worse. You know, in some cases, yes. In some cases, no. Right. So the incidences of mass shootings have gone up. Right. That is worse. But then, like, I looked up the statistic about requiring sex ed. Right. Which states require sex ed? Right. And actually, 28 of them are requiring sex ed with the HIV education now. And then 3 more states are at least only requiring sex ed without the HIV component. And another 10 are requiring an HIV only approach, but they're still at least talking about it, right? So that's gotten better. That's
better than 22.
That's way better. So in some cases, yes, some things are getting better, some things are worse. And it really goes down to like individual school districts or communities. Because just because on the state level, something's not been changed, it can happen on a district level, right? So there are some reasons to be hopeful. Also, I would say that a lot of children are getting now in schools emotional intelligence related training. A lot of schools are providing groups for that kind of stuff and pushing into classrooms in different ways, mm-hmm. that I mean, I wish I had it when I was a kid, right? Like I was born in 93. And I guess, you know, it's incrementally getting better of how they're trying to train children and how they're trying to address bullying and kindness. One of my friends works at a warehouse that ships books to schools. And the books and the titles and the issues that they are talking with children about these days are profoundly important things, like next level things, you know, like a book about how do you help your autistic friend who's having a meltdown. There's a child book about that. So like they're having conversations that we did not get to have. Most everyone on this call, I can assume, has not had that exposure to some of this modern stuff that I think is very good for children. So I want to address that.
That's true. I've seen that. I've tutored in lots of different districts, and the school that I taught in, especially for kids that are either, you know, kids that are struggling, kids that are being bullied, or kids that are bullying. There's a lot of pull out classes that the basically
therapeutic.
What do you call the counselors? School counselors are sort of
guidance counselors.
Yeah. So there's a lot of that. Another thing you mentioned is fitting in, and fitting in is the absolute opposite of belonging. That's the two sides of the spectrum, right? So when you're trying to fit in, you can't experience belonging. It's an absolute opposite thing. And it gets confused. People think, oh, I'm fitting in. I belong in this group, but they just feel so inauthentic that they can't ever, you know, even if they feel like their friends like them or whatever, they're like, well, they don't really know me. So I can't accept the love that I'm being offered, right? Which is why gangs and you know groups like that are so dangerous. No matter how hard you try, you're still fitting in. You're not attaining the belonging. So that's an interesting point to be made. And then the point around generational trauma, that's hitting the nail on the head. It is a profound issue. I would argue it's kind of an invisible. We often make this an invisible issue in our society. And it's like during COVID time. So my mom actually is in charge of school counselors. That's what my mom does, and teaches all this bullying shit. And I'm very proud of her. She does a great job. And she got interviewed during COVID times about what parents should do to help their kids. And I told her, tell them to work on themselves, you know, because if they're calm and collected and doing well, they're going to parent better. Right. Part of it is that parents who haven't learned emotional regulation can't handle a child's emotions. They just don't have tools. So, yeah, there's a lot around educating parents and providing parents with more tools and more training so that they can be better parents, and maybe even some of their own mental health care, because by virtue of resolving your own trauma, you don't replicate that trauma on your children. And I think that is a profound issue for a lot of people. And then also what you had mentioned was, you know, still needing a male role model in your life, yeah. And kind of even resenting that, you know, you couldn't build a steady relationship with one. And yeah, role models is a really important topic here. Because what we see, where we see a lot of people getting the love, the understanding, the experience of feeling safe and accepted for who they are, right, is coming from a role model. And it is the difference, right? You know, ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences Survey, people who have increased amounts of, you know, childhood abuse and neglect and et cetera, ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences Survey. The more of these incidences you have, the more likely you're going to end up in jail, the more likely you'll have a heart attack, the more likely, I mean, you're going to have alcoholism. It's everything, right? And it just amplifies your risk factors. But what's a protective factor? Even if you had the worst child in the world, if you had somebody who you felt safe around, who was a trusted adult, who believed in you, who you felt you could be yourself, you know, accepted for yourself, then you're very likely to be okay, right? You're probably still going to struggle as an adult, but you're much more likely to be okay. And so that's a point I wanted to emphasize too, related to that. So the hope there is that all of us actually have put power to be in someone's life, that person, right? And if a child, no matter how hard their life is, they have that, it's night and day different. Their success, like stories, are way more likely. So I just wanted to kind of plug that as well. Additionally, You talked about kind of being a voice and doing advocacy. You know, that's a stage of healing trauma as well. It's kind of the third stage for a lot of people, telling their stories and being able to become like a survivor voice and talk about things. That is a healing stage for a lot of people too. There's a book called Trauma and Recovery by Judith Herman. It's kind of an old book now, but they go through in detail these stages. And on that third stage is kind of exactly what they're doing. So kudos to everybody here that is doing the kind of trauma healing stuff involved in advocacy. Advocacy is a way to help heal your own trauma and heal your communities. So I just wanted to state that as well.
Yeah, I think for me, with the telling my story and stuff like that for the healing purposes, I mean, I was silenced for a very long time, because when you're associated with the registry, you don't feel like you can tell your voice, right? You feel like you've hurt people, and you feel like, but my situation, it was different. And it was, especially being a young kid whose mentors were female, right? It was my grandmother. It was maybe my mother. It was, you know, my aunt. It was, you know, I was always relatable more towards the female figure than the male figure. So by being associated with the registry that almost categorized me as hurting a woman, it really broke my identity. It really confused me, especially when my matter was a consensual act. So it left me very confused as a young adult growing into becoming an adult. I did want to say, though, when you were talking about the sex ed type stuff. Now, when I was growing up in junior high school, I mean, they were sort of integrating it. We didn't really have sex ed. It was kind of like an elective, and it was pretty much like a puberty kind of a thing. It wasn't like, and now we're trying to tie this to the registry, because I think, like, we're talking about young kid, teenagers addicted to pornography, all that kind of stuff. In your thoughts, I mean, are they sort of explaining this stuff to these kids in high schools about porn addictions and stuff like that? Or are they just talking the birds and the bees kind of, you know?
So the variety of sex ed, and this is really important, because sometimes sex ed is still abstinence-based, and abstinence-based sex ed is ineffective, right? Yeah. It just isn't. So, I mean, I have benefited from growing up in a school district. I'm from Reno, Nevada, originally. And in that school district, there's 64,000 students. So it's a really big school district. And my mom was, while I was a child, in charge of also building the sex ed curriculum and deciding, and the policies around that, and deciding what would be in that. And I think my district did a much better job. And then increasingly, as time has gone on, they just get better and better. So some districts are doing a really good job. We had sex ed in fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade. Wow. Push into classrooms. You had a series, a little bit of it in middle school. And then in ninth grade, you'd have it in health class. So we had types of sex ed, like a whole delivery of different kinds of age-appropriate sex ed.
Yeah.
So yeah, in fourth grade, you're talking a little bit more about puberty and stuff. But then, you know, by the time you're in high school, we're talking about STDs. We're talking about all kinds of things. We're looking at gross pictures. You know, it's like, so they do talk about, I don't know if now they kind of talk about porn addiction, but I wouldn't at all be surprised in some of the more progressive districts if they do. Because the access to everything online, right? We can't really lock this down. There's no way, no filter is going to keep children from talking and from finding things, because our world is so globally informed now, right? Anything you want is at the tip of your fingers. So really, it needs to be acknowledged that there is, you know, there are myths in how, you know, maybe like violence, for example, is not always something your partner wants to experience, right? Like, and a lot of porn is disproportionately showing dominance, male dominance, and violence. So it's like, so actually, I think comprehensive sex ed, quality sex ed, will also talk about domestic violence. And I had the privilege of seeing some programs implemented in districts where they help talk about domestic violence and how do you know if you're in an abusive relationship? Because children get into abusive relationships too. So, you know, we have to talk about that. Every gender, every child needs to know, like, what is power and control? And, you know, what does it look like in an unhealthy relationship? So this is more holistic when you're doing good sex ed.
And then they go home.
All of that.
They go home and they maybe their parents are in an unhealthy relationship, and that's what is normal to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's almost like some parents probably need sex. like they need adult sex ed classes, I guess.
Oh yeah, they do.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, you were very lucky to have your mother, because I mean, I've heard you talk about your mother. Her mother just got called by the state. They want her to apply for a job where she will design the curriculum for the entire state of Nevada. Her mother is
policy work around mental health, around sex ed, around bullying, drugs, like whatever, all of that stuff that's happening.
Her mother, you know, you got a very, very great idea. You got a lot of great ideas. Sex ed, where I was raising my kids, I was regularly like, I got better sex ed in Catholic school, you know, whatever, 30 years ago than the kids are getting today in, you know, Rockwood School District in Missouri. So yeah, it can be a wide, wide range. And I think you're absolutely right about that.
One last thought that I wanted to say with that was, you know, I hope that your state looks at like the state statutes and the state laws. You know, I was involved in like the Romeo and Juliet situation. So there's you have kids in high school that are messing around. And of course, some get marked as being an adult and other ones aren't. So very early on in the movie, it talked about the development, I believe, of like the, you know, the lobes of the brain and the judgment skills and stuff like that. So I can only hope that someday, maybe if it's already been integrated, that not only in addition to these sex ed classes, that whoever is the educator of the class or the teacher is also teaching these kids like, hey, seniors and freshmen, these are what the statutes are, you know, all that kind of stuff too. Because when I was in school, they didn't say anything like that. There was no statutory discussions or anything. You know, it was birds and the bees. You know, the boys get this emotion and the girls get that emotion. And, you know, okay, we're going to break for lunch, you know. And it was almost honestly, like the teacher. Mike,
I talk to people. I get calls in the 1-800 number all the time from people who have exactly the same problem that you had. They had consensual sex 20 or whatever years ago that crossed the line. And they've been on the registry for 25 years.
So I do want to comment on this. You'll be happy to know that I have been in schools that have age of consent posters. And the poster looks like they have every state, because, you know, in every state, it is different. And the poster looks like that. It goes state by state. And you just see them all in lines. And then there's numbers. You know, here's the ages of consent. And I've been in schools and classrooms where I have seen this. Wow. So it in does Nevada? Exist in Nevada.
In Nevada.
And it's like, so yeah, I mean, it really is dependent, right? Your access to information has a lot to do also with your individual teachers. What do they believe? And do they choose to try to share with you things that they, you know, and maybe cross some lines in some cases, you know, things that they think you should know about for life experience, you know, for good things in your world. And yeah, we do have to have more conversations about that, because that's another, really, if the goal of these schools is to raise, you know, healthy children who become healthy adults, that is just, it's part of the holistic approach. We don't want them in prison.
Yeah. Amen to that.
Amen to that. All right.
Well, keep up the good work.
All right. So I would just wanted to read this Joe N comment. Teaching an emotional intelligence to children in elementary school is just as important as ABC 123. Was it not taught to children in Egypt? Nothing.
Off you say tongue. It means know thyself.
Know thyself. Ah, know thyself. Today we call it emotional intelligence, knowledge of self. Yeah, amen.
They learned that before they learned the alphabet and how to count. They learned what they were. That's what we got to take it back to. We don't know what we are. How do you convey a language if you don't know what you're even speaking? You don't know the feelings that you're conveying in the words that you're putting together.
So I want to prop that there's something called nonviolent communication, NVC. Sorry, we lost our screen. Okay. NVC, nonviolent communication. And one of the major tools in the nonviolent communication kind of toolbox is a feelings list, right? Universal human feelings and universal human needs. And I can provide some of these that I like. But basically, it should be, I think, on every desk, in every hallway, in every classroom, because the list of feelings is insanely broad, right? We learn, you know, and there's such things as a feelings wheel. I don't know if anyone's ever seen a feelings wheel, right? But like, you know, a lot of people can't get far enough to even know if they're experiencing anger or sadness or both, right? We have like these just primary emotions, but really those are categories of emotions. And within them, there are so many, right? Another thing is needs, right? Connected to, usually your feelings come up connected to either unmet needs or met needs, right? So you get a lot of emotions we might call a negative emotion if you aren't meeting your needs, right? When you feel your need for safety isn't being met, maybe you feel fearful, right? It's a bad emotion, right? I mean, but also all the emotions are not bad, right? So humanizing people, we have to teach them that there are no bad emotions, right? Emotional tolerance, emotional depth. And so yeah, you're absolutely right. Know thyself, you know, should be actually a curriculum that goes, I think, yearly, right? Annually is a part of your core standards, right? Common core standards, right? We talk about what you're going to learn this year in math and what you're going to learn this year in science and whatever. And a lot of that is national. We should have national core standards around human needs, you know, human feelings, and learning how to name those things within yourself. Yeah, I absolutely would love to see some standards written there.
Yeah, why are you feeling angry? There's a reason why you're feeling angry. Are you able to articulate this with the right words on why you feel a certain way? We're not taught that. We're taught as men to be, I don't have emotions. That's not even true. Everyone and everything has emotions. Even when you're indifferent, that's still an emotion.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that is also back to the subject of vulnerability, right? I do highly recommend reading some Brené Brown. A lot of men love her, even though she claims that she doesn't have the ability to write completely about the male experience because it's just different. Like what the expectations of men are different due to their socialization. But basically, it all goes back to being vulnerable. And when vulnerability is always weaponized against you somehow, and you're shamed for it, you know, like, stop being a pussy, you know, like you're being a little girl, right? By being emotional, then the scariest thing you can do is admit your humanness and have emotions and then express those, right? So often I think it causes dissociation from your emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, I want to be respectful of our time. Did we like this? I think, was this a helpful thing? All right. I'm, you know, I'm just kind of winging it, but, you know, whenever I see something that I feel like would be, well appreciated by our community, I bring it on. So if we like this, maybe I'll make up a survey and start asking people that kinds of things as I develop new speakers. And honestly, if you come up with a speaker in the world that you think, oh, this would be really great, I hope you all have my email. I'm going to type it in the chat real fast, and then I'm going to show you all again how to save the chat, because you know there's some good stuff in here, some books that you might want to go look at. Where's my typing? Yeah. Anyway, I'm Anne at War Family.
Here, it's being weird.
It is being so annoying. Yeah. All right, I'm going to type it on my screen. WarFamilyFoundation.org. I got to go to the front. Yep, yes. I see. Okay. I missed my first two letters.
Also, there are documentaries. There's another documentary, just so everyone knows, kind of about the dehumanization of females and the socialization of females. And that is, you know, there are female, we definitely can talk about, there are people who are female on the registry. So it would be another interesting topic if people were interested in that, to just compare, you know, how our society fails everyone, really. Our society fails everyone by not allowing them to be in the world, all human, right?
Yeah. Okay, so if you open the chat, and then at the top of the chat, there's these three dots, and then an arrow, and then an X. So click on the three dots, and when you click on the three dots, the top thing at the top should say save chat. Anyway, thank you everybody for coming. Thank you, Elizabeth, for your always fascinating conversation. And I'll see you in 2 weeks. Yes, Joey is going to come speak to us pretty soon.
Cool.
I don't remember which day. Soon. All right. Bye, everybody.